sort of projects that were going on at the same time as she was making her music. So you can really tell that, I think, in the work that she put out in her day. All right, that will be it for me. I'll wrap it up with some special announcements from our lovely cart machine. But I had a real blast hanging out with y'all today, and thank you for all the callers. I'll see you next week. I'll be covering this show again. So thank you for sticking around and listening to music. Bye!
If you're a UCD undergrad and are having any legal issues, then ASUCD Legal Services may be the solution for you, offering domestic or civil legal assistance. To receive a consultation, all you have to do is take your Aggie card to the Student Services Office at 347 Memorial Union. Once there, an appointment will be made for you to speak with a licensed attorney via phone. For more info, please call the Student Services Office at 530-752-1990.
Project is a student-run rescue based out of the UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine that saves hundreds of underage kittens each year. Our mission is to rescue orphaned and abandoned kittens and adopt them into loving homes while training future veterinarians in the medical care of feline neonates. We are currently in need of foster homes for kittens of all ages. Veterinary students and veterinarians provide medical care for foster kittens, and before admission, all kittens are vaccinated, FELV tested, spayed or neutered, and microchipped. If you can help, please visit our website at orphankittenproject.com or our Facebook at facebook.com/orphankittenproject.
Hey everyone out there, this is Cameron LaLana of the Conspiracy Comrades. So today we'll be talking a little bit about the moon landing. Unfortunately, our episode isn't quite ready, so we're going to have the full thing for you in just a minute. But for now, I'll be giving you a little bit of behind the scenes work for what Katie and I usually do every week. So I wanted to talk about getting into conspiracy theories for a little bit, because it's a difficult thing to cover because you have to simultaneously research topics and also address the fact of their falsehoods. Now, not everything you touch on or we touch on is false, as we've talked about previously. MKUltra was something that was thought to be false but actually ended up being a real program that the US government was following through on. So when we approach these topics, we have to sit down and think, okay, when this is false, we have to address the fact that it is false, because when we talk about this, when we even bring up a conspiracy theory, we're signal boosting it. And that's not something that we want to do, because these things do have practical consequences in the public sphere. Now, obviously, we're a small college town radio show. We don't have that much of influence in the world. But as student journalists, we also recognize that that sort of attitude writ large leads to people, for example, in the mass media bringing up conspiracies like this without giving them proper context, or even when they do, signal boosting falsehoods in the public sphere, which then lead to more and more people believing things or asking questions. And it's perfectly normal for people to ask questions and to say, hey, is this true? I deserve to look into it myself. And that's very fair. But when people do it and they're not specialists, that can lead to difficulties because they don't know what questions to ask, or they don't know whether or not they should be, whether or not they're asking in the right direction. Because, as we'll discuss later in this episode, sometimes asking the wrong questions can be worse than not asking any questions at all. Thank you for sticking around. I think we're going to go to our episode now. So you're listening to 90.3 KDVS.
Views presented in this half hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California. I'm Katie Morgan.
And I'm Cameron Lalana.
And you're listening to Conspiracy Comrades.
On 90.3 KDVS.
It's a little shadowy, but he said he expected that in the shadow of the lunar module. Armstrong is on the moon. Neil Armstrong, 38-year-old American, standing on the surface of the moon. On this July 20th, 1969.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Almost every American can recognize Neil Armstrong's iconic words when taking his first step on the moon. The step has deeply political implications, ones that expanded far beyond the highly secretive doors of NASA. The Cold War was perhaps at one of the heights of its slow burn, pitting the United States' space program against the USSR's. The Soviets successfully launched Sputnik into orbit in 1957, making them the first country to send a satellite and later an astronaut into space. Prior to his assassination, John F. Kennedy stressed his intention to send a man to the moon, painting the effort as a dire battle between capitalist and communist powers. The moon landing in July of 1969 displayed the apparent might of the American space program, and is still today a point of pride and excitement in American culture. However, there are people who continue to believe the moon landing was partially or entirely faked, relying upon slick movie magic and sleight of hand to give us the iconic imagery embedded within the American psyche. This week, we'll be diving headfirst into perhaps one of the most recognizable conspiracy theories out there, the 1969 moon landing.
I'd like to jump in here and say a little correction. That's the apparent 1969 moon landing. Because I've been watching some videos recently, and I think some of them have a few points, which are actually pretty good.
Thank you, Cam. Thank you. The apparent moon landing.
The apparent moon landing.
So sorry. We constantly joke when we research for these that I'm the one that plays it very safe. I'm always doing files and stuff. I'm always like, yeah, I'm doing like a journalist's work. Whereas Cameron's like, I am going to believe in this conspiracy theory if I spend more than 5 more minutes looking at this Blogspot.
Look, sometimes you get really deep into weird corners of YouTube or weird corners in the internet, and that's where you find the most compelling people often. And I'm not saying that I'm a weak-minded man, but I am saying that I'm very susceptible to propaganda.
Just judging by all the Russian propaganda on your,
yeah, exactly,
on your bedroom walls.
Yes, people think, is that, are you trying to convince people to come in your room? And I'm saying, no, I'm just trying to remind myself what I believe, because I forget every 5 minutes like Memento.
Oh. Okay. So just so everyone knows, you know, if either of us is going to go down walking away from this show believing in some kind of conspiracy theory, it's probably going to be Cameron over me.
Yeah, it will. Or you.
No, over me.
Got it. Yes, it will definitely be me.
Okay.
It's not been 3 days since I was talking to my aunt and she finished the call with, okay, well, if the FBI comes knocking, I'm going to pretend I don't know you.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I was telling her about the IRA.
Oh, well, okay, that's why.
Yeah. Oh, no, it was justified. she said,
fully justified.
Originally, her worry was because I went to Russia that they were going to come. And then I said, Aunt Patty, that's not the reason why you should be worried. They're going to come.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We joke a lot that we're on a lot of lists now because of all the places we've been doing research for this show.
Oh, absolutely.
So if we just go missing one day, the CIA came for us.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. I think we said that like our second ever episode.
I think you're right about the second episode.
Yeah, but we're still here.
We're still here.
Apparently no one quite cares enough about us, which that's fine.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I can take them not caring.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd rather be alive.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Okay, the moon landing.
Okay.
So do you want to get to I guess you've already gotten a little bit into the context of the moon landing, but let's talk about the Apollo mission.
Yes. Well, actually, I'm going to give a little bit more context first.
Oh, yes.
Because we all know I am a huge history lady.
Of course. Yes.
And I always like to start off with the history of things.
That's
so
fair.
Hopefully y'all find this entertaining because I do.
I think that will.
Okay.
And entertaining.
Okay, fantastic. So we're going to start off talking about Sputnik because that was the first successful satellite launch during the Cold War. Anytime, but obviously the space race and the Cold War go pretty hand in hand in this case. So, October 1957, the Soviet Union successfully launches Sputnik, It was about the size of a beach ball. It weighed 183 pounds. Took about 98 minutes to orbit the Earth in its elliptical path. So this is the first time that obviously we have anything in space, right? So we have a satellite finally. But it's a very pointed event in terms of the, you know, quintessential USSR versus US, communism versus capitalism.
Right.
You know, all that kind of, you know, political fun times.
Yeah,
and
on
everything.
Multiple levels you have. A, you know, the Russians are like, all right, we got our guy Yuri Gagarin, he's in space. We've got better technological programs than you. We've got greater achievement. We got better scientists. And also, if we can get a rocket into space, we can get a rocket to America. Different payloads, probably. You
right.
probably won't shoot Yuri Gagarin at Washington.
Right.
Probably.
So, yeah, that's a big thing with Sputnik. And then eventually with the first cosmonaut in space as well is the U.S., is actually starting to invest more in its science programs now because it's like, oh no, like the Soviet Union is beating us to space. Like, what will communism do in space? Who knows? So this kind of begins to, you know, the American sort of the brain starts turning and everyone's like, hey, should we maybe like start on this?
Should we start investing money into this?
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Should we start, you know, really going in on this?
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously, quite famously, JFK is the first president to really sort of buckle down on this and be like, yeah, we're going to send someone to space. We're going to do it by the end of the decade. So he gives this speech in 1961 talking about, you know, yeah, we're going to go to the moon. It's going to be super cool. You know, we're going to beat the Soviets, you know, communists, gross, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So... this is the early 1960s, you know.
Yeah, we're academics.
Yeah, sure. So he gives these, so the original kind of plan to expand the space program begins in 1961. He gives this speech in 1962 at Rice University in Texas.
But why, some say, the moon? Why choose this as our goal? And they may well ask, why climb the highest mountain? Why, 35 years ago, fly the Atlantic? Why does Rice play Texas? We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Kennedy is like, hey, now is our time, guys. We are going to space.
We got it this time.
We got it this time, guys.
You may have gotten the first man, woman, and dog into space, but we're going to get to the moon first.
Right. Exactly. So, obviously, you know, JFK gets killed in 1963.
Or apparently killed.
Stop it. That's for later.
That's
for a different episode. So, actually, after Kennedy dies, that's actually another thing that I mentioned to Cameron earlier that I thought was funny, was immediately after Kennedy announces that we, quote, should commit itself, the U.S., to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth. But I thought it was funny. They did a Gallup poll right after that speech. And people like weren't super impressed. It was like 58% of Americans were opposed to the moon landing idea just immediately after JFK started talking about it. And I don't know why I thought that was so funny. Because I feel like when we think about like the space race and JFK being like, we need to land a man on the moon, all of us are like, oh yeah, that was such like, you know, it's American innovation and investment in, you know, science and technology and stuff like that. But like 50% of Americans were like, no. This is stupid. I don't know why I think it's so funny. Yeah, Cameron can attest. I was laughing in here earlier about it. I just don't know why I think it's so funny. So in the same speech to Congress in 1961, he delivers this speech on what he calls urgent national needs. So he asks for anywhere from $7 to $9 billion over the next 5 years, so through 1966, for the space program. And this is exclusively for the moon landing expedition. So basically there were questions about whether, you know, NASA was going to be able to actually deliver this in time. Obviously, the end of the decade isn't super long. I mean, it's, you know, 8 years, but there's only 8 years in technology sometimes is, you know, not that much time, objectively speaking.
Not back then, it wasn't.
No, exactly. So, in the meantime, we launched the first American into Earth, John Glenn Jr. And then, obviously, we get to working on the Apollo missions, which are the ones that, you know, actually land men on the moon in the first place. So, obviously, after all this buildup, after 8 years, Apollo is kind of sort of like a testament to JFK's legacy, I would say. Obviously, 1969 is during the Nixon administration, which isn't necessarily an administration you would think would, you know, follow up with one of JFK's policies. But, you know, they do it kind of to honor the memory of JFK, right, essentially.
In a roundabout way, they would later go on to both eat this cake and also have it, too, when they defunded the program.
Cool. Yes. Yeah, so July 20th, 1969, all three of the Apollo 11 astronauts, well, not all three, sorry. So it's Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin go actually down to the surface of the moon and, you know, have that iconic first step, you know, all those pictures that people think are fake. And then Michael Collins actually stayed in the command center, basically, and kept piloting it around the moon until they connected back up later, which is why we don't hear much about Michael Collins. We were saying that earlier today where I was talking to Cameron and I was like, hey, you know, we all know there's three astronauts that were a part of the Apollo 11 mission, but why do none of us know the third guy's name?
I know. And when you told that to me, I instantly forgot his name and thought you meant Phil Collins. So that's a real, I mean, it's more of a testament to my own cognitive decline, but also, sorry, Michael, and he really got done dirty by this
one. Cognitive decline? You're 22.
You know, sometimes you live fast, die hard.
Oh.
Speed racer.
Oh, my God.
I think I meant Fast and the Furious. That's okay.
Okay, anyway. Right. So, yes. Yeah, so, Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin land on the moon. Michael Collins stays up in the command center, which I think, honestly, might be why we don't think about him as much, because he didn't actually step on the moon. I don't know. Anyway, so, this is kind of a big, obviously, boost to the, you know, blue-blooded, like, American capitalist, you know. It's like, oh, yeah, like, you guys have, you know, a dog and a cosmonaut and a satellite, but hey, we have a guy on the moon right now. We're way cooler than you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, at this point, you know, the Cold War is still, you know, slowly raging on.
Right.
And this is a huge boost to the U.S. You know, it says, hey, we invested in our science and technology. We, you know, really have the ability to be able to send a person into the, you know, to step foot on the moon in the first place.
Right.
Which is, so it's obviously like a huge point of American pride at this point. Even now, I feel like, you know, we just celebrated the 50th anniversary of the moon landing.
Yeah.
And even then, everyone was like, oh, my God. What a day in American history that was. You know, it's one of those things where people remember where they were on that day if they were alive. Obviously, we were very much not.
No, I certainly don't.
No, but I know, like, my dad was born in 1964, and I know he remembers, you know, at least a little bit of the moon landing, which I think is kind of cool.
Right.
But
in a lot of interviews, I see people talking about it as a great moment of unity among people, which, of course, that's a great moment. Unity among certain classes of people. If you are familiar with certain other classes of people, they didn't really care so much. Where might have been the number, the 56% who didn't quite care at the time that JFK was talking about it. Probably some of them still didn't care when they were trying to pay rent. But, of course, among people who were interested in this, there was a great moment of American unity.
Sure. But, yeah, so there's your kind of your background on, you know, NASA and the space race and everything. So resident blogspot diver Cameron is here to give you just all the, I feel like we do this a lot, but I went more the history background route, and Cameron went a lot more of the, here's all the things that could be wrong with the moon landing.
I did have to promise Katie that I wouldn't watch several documentaries made by people who do not believe the moon landing, because as she told me, and as she rightfully told me, I'd probably walk out a believer, which, you know, I would, so.
In my defense, you said that to me, and I said, you're probably right. If that makes you feel any better.
No, you were right.
Okay. I mean.
Anyway, so thank you for the wonderful explanation of events. And
oh,
I'm going to add a big fat caveat, which is, or did that all happen?
Mm-hmm.
So.
There he is, folks.
There are a lot of directions you could take this, and I kind of wanted to go in like the weirdest directions, which are the people who don't believe the moon is real at all, but there's so much there, so...
There's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah, we figured we'd focus in really narrowly on the people who do not believe that the Apollo missions happened, generally based on the video that was broadcasted in all over the world when the moon landing first happened. And there are a lot of small details that people... claim or proof that this was filmed on a soundstage on Earth, perhaps by Stanley Kubrick, perhaps not. So I'm going to try to go one by one, talk about each one and their veracity. So I'm going to start with probably the most facile one, which is how did the astronauts film leaving the capsule if they were inside and the cameras were on the legs? And as a follow-up, people ask, how could they take pictures if they didn't have anything in their hands? As you can see in the reflection of the visors, well, the cameras are in their helmets. So the cameras were there. They didn't have to deal with them. You can't see them. Let's follow that up with Neil Armstrong. I've gotten Neil Armstrong's name wrong so many times today.
Yes, we have the whole, you know, Phil Collins thing.
Yeah.
And then we also have... He's called Neil Armstrong Lance Armstrong at least three times in the last hour, I think.
At least once I thought Stretch Armstrong before thinking, oh no, it's
oh, no.
Lance Armstrong.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Okay, so.
my God.
So some people, when they look at the footage of, not the footage, the picture of Neil Armstrong leaving the Apollo spacecraft, they note that the area around the ladder is covered in shadow, but Neil is completely illuminated. So how could that be if there wasn't a light directly on Neil? Now, the Mythbusters actually addressed this in a 2008 special.
Yeah.
Yeah, we love them.
The Mythbusters are good for everything.
They have covered everything.
They have.
Literally everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll put that in the show notes as well if you guys want to. It's like a 4-minute clip just about the light sources in particular, but they did do a whole special. I wasn't able to find it on... like Netflix or Hulu or like YouTube or anything like that. But we do have the 4-minute clip, so it's better than nothing, I guess.
It's super interesting, as will be relevant in some of the other claims that people make. The rocks on the moon, because there is no atmosphere, the light, both from the sun and some from the Earth, hit this kind of particular space dust, and the moon's very ridge, so it's uneven, and it actually reflects off of this dust. So there are more than one light source, technically, too, between the sun and the Earth. So you have not only the sun shining onto it, the light from the sun being reflected off the Earth, but the light of the sun being reflected off the moon itself in many directions. And as they not only point out, but demonstrate in their video, it's completely possible that Neil Armstrong was illuminated by the rocks only in the flash of the camera. When they set up the cameras, they take one still image and have one ongoing camera being... filming him. And as you can see in the ongoing camera, their little doll of Neil Armstrong is completely dark, whereas in the camera, he's illuminated by the lights being reflected off the rocks in that 1 second of flash. So that there weren't necessarily a second light source. Following up with the shadows discussion, as some people have pointed out, especially my main man, Bart Sibrel, noted Moon Man, as he calls himself in the videos.
Main Man is maybe a huge overstatement.
My main Moon Man.
Oh my God.
Several photos that the astronauts took on the moon have shadows at different angles. And one in particular he points out in his video. Actually, I'm not going to name his video. Don't watch it.
Yeah.
There's a photo that one of the astronauts took in which their shadow is projecting forward, but the shadow of a rock in the right side of the picture is projecting perpendicular to their shadow. So how could that be if there was only a single light source? There had to be multiple light sources in order to create multiple shadows, right? Well, actually, there could be a few explanations for this. As pointed out earlier, there are actually multiple light sources on the moon, the sun, the Earth, and the moon itself. So it's definitely possible that there were slightly weird angles. But it could also be that this is a case of perspective. As noted by Phil Plate in a 2001 review of a documentary, quote-unquote, about the moon landing, shadows can often be distorted based on your sense of perspective, and he invites the reader to go out and try this themselves. At sunset, when the sun is quite low, shadows are quite long, try and look at shadows which are near you and then look at shadows that are far to you. And you might notice that they aren't quite angled in the same way because of your sense of perspective. If you were to look at them from completely overhead, you'd see that they are all going the same angle. But because you're kind of looking at something, especially if you're looking at something, a 3D object in 2D, as these photos are, you're not going to get the right sense of reality. Some things are going to be a little bit distorted. So either of these could explain why shadows aren't quite right in some of these photos. So another thing that many people bring up is the flag. If you watch the footage of Lance Armstrong...
He did it again.
If you watch Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin planting the flag on the moon, you'll see that it has a slightly weird wave to it. It's sticking out. It's kind of flapping back and forth. And conspiracy theorists say that this is a sign that there is actually air in the soundstage where this is being filmed, that this could not have happened in the moon where there is no gravity, there is no air. But, as many people have pointed out, and as actually you can actually see for yourself if you watch the video, that actually isn't air that's flapping the flag. There is, first of all, a bar which holds the flag out, so it's being held straight, and the flag actually only flaps when Buzz Aldrin is, I believe it's Buzz, is trying to put the flag in the ground. They're struggling, it's flapping back and forth, and then once they get it into the ground, it's almost still, except for the fact that it's still got some of the ripples from trying to put it in, which are because of the lack of gravity, or excuse me, the lack of atmosphere, are kind of floating back and forth, but not in the same way that you'd have if it were wind, the kind of natural motion. And if you watch flag plantings from later Apollo missions, especially Apollo 17, where the film is much clearer, you can see this effect in much greater detail, that the motions of the flag are unnatural and are clearly just a continuation of the ripples of the astronauts trying to put it in the ground until it kind of settles down and stops moving.
It's actually quite interesting too. So we went kind of in on the videos for this one just because we figured it's still pretty relevant conspiracy theory as far as, I don't know about people believing it anymore. There's studies that say anywhere from 6 to 20% of people believe the moon landings were faked, which, I mean, that's a pretty big margin of error.
Yeah.
but I think based on the stories that I read, it's closer to the 6% versus the 20. But, you know, we were watching yesterday, I don't know if anyone's ever seen Adam Ruins Everything, but we watched a video about that. And, you know, it actually was easier for people, for NASA to send people to the moon than it would have been for them to put up a soundstage and create, you know, the exact perfect lighting. That kind of lighting didn't exist in 1969.
Right. If they wanted to get exactly as it was, they would have had to have all the fake dust in the ground, getting the right kinds of reflections that would illuminate the astronauts getting out, but not get rid of the shadow itself. They would have had to have multiple light sources for that at such a degree that they were so directed that they were not casting secondary shadows, that if you have multiple light sources, obviously you're going to have multiple shadows. Mm-hmm. So they would have had to have so directed light sources that it wasn't doing that, which is not apparent in the film.
Right. I thought it was really funny. I was reading an article from Vox about kind of like the 50th anniversary of the moon landing and how, you know, the conspiracy theory still persists and everything. And there's this one line that I thought was really funny. It says, "But the moon landing hoax theory has persisted for decades due to the simple fact that if you don't think about it too hard, it sort of makes sense." And I just thought that was so funny.
I feel like that's a driving factor of a lot of the things we talk about.
Yeah, kind of. But it is just, you know, it's kind of just one of those things where if it's true, you know, if you don't think about it too hard, it's like, oh, wouldn't, you know, there's the Van Allen radiation belts where, you know, there's a huge amount of radiation surrounding the planet. And it's like, oh, well, like, wouldn't that radiation kill them? Or, you know, how would people have really put together all this stuff? Like, how would NASA have put together everything to make a moon landing actually work properly and everything? But, you know, it's
right.
I feel like people are just, it's one of those things where it was so secretive and now it's so public that I think a lot of people sort of look at it and think, oh, you know,
right,
let's pick apart every single thing that doesn't make sense to us and kind of, you know, question everything.
It's a group of people who are so committed to being skeptical and rational that they kind of overlooked some of the obvious. For example, Bart Sabrell spent a lot of time with my man.
Oh my God.
Has a video up on his channel where Werner Von Braun, who was the inventor of the V2 rocket, Nazi scientist brought to America, fun times. Operation Paperclip. Yep. Love it. Was explaining how a rocket could leave orbit, leave Earth's orbit. And he points out that you need a rocket to get up to the atmosphere, then you need somehow to refuel, and then use that fuel to then shoot out of Earth's atmosphere. And Sobrel uses this point to say, well, as Von Braun, the inventor of the V2, in a large figure in NASA, in fact, an award in NASA was named after him until recently, when people were like, hey, maybe we shouldn't have an award named after a Nazi. This wasn't possible. But if you watch the video itself, Von Braun is pointing out what you'd have to do to leave Earth's atmosphere. And if you know how the Apollo mission worked, which is that the rocket launched in stages, and each stage was its own mission, had its own rocket, fired off, used up its fuel, then broke off, then the next stage up would fire its rocket. That's actually a problem NASA would later go on to solve. So, as you said, Katie, if you don't think about it too hard, you look back at Wernher von Braun, yeah, at that time, it wasn't possible to exit the atmosphere. But then other scientists came up with solutions. And kind of going along with that, the same guy brings up a video from astronaut Don Petit, who expresses his desire to go to the moon, but then says, but the problem with that is that we've destroyed that technology. We don't have it right now. Which, again, on the surface, as Brad points out, it's, hey, if we had this technology in the 1960s, how could we not have this technology today? On first glance, it seems to make sense. But when you really sit back and think about what Don means, it's not that we destroyed the capability of going to the moon. It's that we don't possess the logistical infrastructure to go to the moon. As I mentioned earlier, although JFK was big on going to the moon, and as like Katie pointed out, although people did go to the moon in the Nixon administration, Nixon was not super big on the idea of going to the moon. Nixon wanted to make space travel less of a going to, you know, planets out far and doing who knows what there just for scientific study, but he wanted to make it more a regular part of American policy, which is to say that he defunded the Apollo missions before they were supposed to, before they were actually supposed to finish, and then started funding NASA programs, which led to the modern space shuttle and led to the technologies that we use to go into low altitude in space to go access the ISS and other, you know, space missions like that, that are not going as far as the moon. So for the last 50 years or so, we've not been funding missions to go that far. Our attention has been away from that infrastructure, which took us there in the 1960s, and it's been on a completely different type of space travel. So what Petit means is that we deconstructed the program we had at that time. It's not that we don't have the technology, it's just that the technology we have today is geared towards a different type of space travel.
The following views presented in this hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California. Good afternoon, listeners. This is Francisco Dominguez here, Radio Informar. We have a very special show coming up here today, and we're going to start off with some music by the Highwaymen. Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, Kris Kristofferson, and Waylon Jennings, the Highwaymen. The song is titled Deportee. We'll be right back with our interview. Thank you for tuning in. This is something that happened in the 50s and down in Los Gatos.
The crops are all in and the peaches are rotten. The oranges are packed in the creosote dumps. They're flying them back to the Mexican border to save all their money, then wade back again. My father's own father, he waded that river. Others before him have done just the same. They died in the hills and they died in the valleys. Some went to heaven without any name. Goodbye to my one, goodbye Rosalita. Adios mi amigo, Jesus y Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane. All they will call you will be deportee. Some of us are illegal and others not wanted. Our work contract's out and we have to move on.
600 miles to the Mexican border.